Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Geeking Out at the Tower podcast. I'm your host, Andrew, and today I'm joined by...
Kevin.
Sebastian.
And Ali.
And today's episode we'll be discussing the movies Big Hero 6 and Interstellar. But before that, let's talk about what news has been going on in the geekosphere and around. So I hear they're releasing Toy Story 4 in 2017, if I'm not mistaken?
Was it 2017?
I don't think they set
they
up
did not
a
set
date.
Date.
No,
yeah, they said 2017, Toy Story 4, prepare to get your childhoods ruined, pretty much.
That sounds about it. I didn't think we needed a Toy Story 4. To
yeah, I was really surprised. It's like, wait, they're bringing a fourth one?
But you know what? The director of the first and second Toy Story is on board for directing the fourth one. And he said that, you know, usually with the way it ended, they probably didn't have a good idea, but now they think they have a great idea to continue the story.
Well, that does give me some hope to some extent, but I felt like you could have stopped at Toy Story 3 and had a really good final ending and enjoy it. And I feel like, in some regards, I'm hoping they don't retread old ground over and over again.
Yeah, I don't want to see, like, it's like, oh great, Andy's back again. And it's like, no, they've been given away. Let's see how the story can progress.
Maybe
now.
The toys find a time machine and go back in time. Spend time with Andy.
That is.
That's terrible. That's
really.
I'm glad
dumb
you're
thing.
Not directing it.
Yeah, or writing it. God damn.
So it'll be
horrible.
Plot twist. M. Night Shyamalan confirmed.
Oh
god.
I would like to believe that Pixar has a little bit more credibility
than hiring
M. Night Shyamalan. And in other news, Star Wars Episode 7 finally got its full title, The Force Awakens. It doesn't sound so bad. It makes sense when you think about it, because it'll be like what Luke. Training a new generation of Jedi?
Not necessarily. From some sources, they say that Luke is more secluded and unwilling to use his powers because he's just too powerful and thinks that he might be corrupted. So, The Force Awakens is because, at this point, he doesn't have a choice. He has to go.
Yeah, because I guess he's like the last one now, so he's being corrupted by both sides because his father got turned, and then there's trying to balance that.
And there's
right
a new generation of people, okay, that are Force-sensitive that are probably showing up.
Especially the kids, Leia's and Han's kids.
Well, we assume that they're
kids.
Yeah.
Because they're not keeping any of the expanded... Well, not any, but they're not keeping the expanded universe as is.
Yeah,
but,
because they declared that it was not canon.
But there is still hope that they might take parts
elements,
of it
yes.
and use it within the show, within the movie, because some of it, from what I hear at least, is pretty good. At least I think everyone wants Mara Jade back.
Mara Jade doesn't really matter. Heirs of the Empire, which were the three books that came... like. The first three books that came following what happened in episode 6 were amazing. They could have totally made a movie out of that, but you know what? It's all good.
It'll be interesting how the flashbacks work too, because I know the Fisher's daughter is playing Leia as a kid apparently.
Oh.
So that's going to be interesting how they're going to use the flashback, how that's going to work out with the story, because obviously we've never had that in any of the Star Wars.
That's true. I think that they may be not going far back as kids, or like how old is her daughter? Or are they going back to like that period after?
Well, her daughter would be pretty, you know, she's pretty old.
Well, they all look pretty old. Remember when it's like, the old cast is coming back, and you saw the pictures of them? I'm just like, ugh.
That's not going to work.
Yeah, her uncle was 24, like in 77, so.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm definitely hopeful. See how Disney, with Disney's reign on it, how it's going to go. I'm hopeful. I think everybody in this wants to have another Star Wars movie, so we'll see.
Not just one Star Wars movie. They're predicting, like, a Star Wars movie every year for the rest of eternity.
Yeah, unless it flops miserably.
Well, I really don't want a Star Wars movie every year for the rest of eternity.
Well, they said after episode 7, there's
Han Solo
or Yoda.
They haven't really cast that or done anything with that, so I don't know when they're gonna do all this. Well, at least we're getting a TV show. We've got a TV show out of it, but I haven't seen yet. But
oh, you mean the Star Wars garbage Rebels?
Yeah, we'll talk about that another time, I think.
It's possible. It's quite possible. And I guess in news that is kind of well-timed with the movie Interstellar's release, we have a comet called Rosetta. Sorry, we have
a probe
called Rosetta
that landed on a comet called...
The probe itself did not land. It orbited the comet and released its lander.
Oh, right.
The lander is Philly, or is it the comet?
Yeah,
Philly.
Oh, well, we'll say Philly.
Fill it?
Yeah.
I guess, okay.
It's always sunny.
Isn't it like... Nah, I'm pretty sure it's more Latin, like phile. Anyway.
You say potato, I say potato.
P-H-I-L-A-E.
Yeah, like phile.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure they name most of these things after Latin anyway.
Well, yeah, it's, the thing is, I think I've heard it pronounced Philae. Actually, the daughter of the goddess of the moon. That's where the name comes from.
So it's the work from the European Space Agency. Yeah. It's neat that that's happened.
It took 10 years, but they finally pulled it off, and they looked really happy when they finally did it, too.
Well, yeah, can you imagine investing 10 years? Yeah, the first part of the mission is actually catching up to the comet and just, like, getting that information, those pictures. But this was like the bonus. They weren't sure if it would work, but seeing that it managed to grab a hold onto the comet, fantastic news.
Awesome. That's just a bit of the news that's been going around out there this week. We'll be back shortly with the Geeking Around segment. Alright, welcome back everybody, and this is the Geeking Around segment where we discuss a few of the things we've been doing geeky or otherwise these days. And we're going to start with Kevin. What have you been up to?
Not that much right now. For at work, I had a board game day. It was just fun. We spent a lot of time playing a lot of board games.
Anyone specific?
Several of them.
Just choose one.
Dixit.
Alright. I don't get it.
And Shadowhunters.
Everyone likes Dixit. But you have to have a very specific group to play Dixit with.
I've never played Dixit.
Yes, you did.
I don't remember it then.
When I first bought it, we played
and it was horrible.
Which one was it again? I forget.
The one where you had a card, and then the last game we played is the one where each card we could only say the name of a person.
Yes, I remember it.
You definitely need a specific group.
Yeah.
A creative group.
Yeah. Not necessarily creative. You just have to understand how people think.
Actually know how to use certain words, because there's one guy who was just like,
vocabulary.
And like, it was terrible.
I do not know.
If you get the right people, it works well. I also, I found that there was a dub of Log Horizon, since there's the second season that's subtitled. I was interested in taking a look at that, and it's not so bad. I enjoyed it, actually. I'm surprised that it, I was expecting it to be kind of bad compared to the subtitled version, but no, it's not so bad. It works really well with the voicing.
Anyone have notes, or any recognizable voices?
No.
Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill, I doubt it. He's a little bit more unionized.
Anime. And I also started watching Star Trek Enterprise.
Boo.
I've never seen it. It was actually one that I avoided because I heard so many bad things about it.
And you made a good choice for so many years.
So I figured recently I just wanted to watch it and see what it was all about. I don't think I'll ever watch it again afterwards. It doesn't hold up like The Next Generation or Deep Space Nine.
Even Voyager had better grounds.
I'll give you that one, though I'm not a big fan of Voyager, personally.
I'm definitely a The Next Generation fan.
I like that one. I like the classic series because of how campy it is.
I never liked the original series.
Look up a video where Kirk's like fighting moves, and it's just a video. One of them is called the Wall of Destruction. So just look at that, and you'll understand why I enjoy it so much. Something to that extent.
So yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been up to this week.
Ali,
this week I started watching Bob's Burgers because people told me to watch it, and surprisingly enough, I like it. I don't know if anyone else is watching Bob's Burgers.
Did you watch it because of the voice actor?
H. John Benjamin?
That kind of turned me off at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because all you hear is Archer. And everyone's voice in that show is crazy annoying. Everyone has a really, really annoying voice.
Tina has like the best voice.
Yeah, Tina sounds like a dude. The wife sounds like a dude.
Gene
acts like a girl. And Louise is probably the best character in the whole show.
For sure.
I think so. But, you know, like, season one, I think, is... it takes a while to get used to it. But I'm starting, like, season two a lot more than season one. And you kind of forget about the Archer voice. You just gotta get used to it.
I suggest you watch the episode of Archer where they're playing as, like, the Bob Burger family, but, like, he forgets what he's doing.
Two seasons ago. Premiere.
Yeah. You should watch
it. It's so good to watch after that, and you're like, no.
I thought they did that in Bob's Burgers as well.
It was just the crossover.
That was the Archer episode. Yeah.
The characters ended up
where he's Bob.
If you really want to be weirded out, watch Home Movies because he plays the coach.
The coach, yeah.
Wait, what movie?
Home Movies. It's an old cartoon. In the early adult cartoon era.
It's so good.
It's a good show.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying that. And what else happened this week? Naruto finally ended. ended.
Thank God.
This week after, what was 15 years?
Not long enough.
Yeah, something like that, because I remember starting that in high school.
Yeah. I started the year before I went to college.
Yeah, I remember college, starting reading a bit of the manga, and then the anime was coming up really quickly after.
Yeah.
And so I think everyone was watching it at the time.
Until the year of filler. The infamous year of filler.
It was pretty much, you know, everyone was in that phase where ninjas were super cool, and Naruto was hot shit. Everybody on the planet was watching it or reading it, and
I like hot shit. He's like a blonde-haired, orange jumpsuit-wearing ninja. Yeah, that was perfect.
Like it's anime. Everyone liked
it. He's very discreet.
It was the biggest thing at the time, and I think you have to be a little sad that it's ended. But I mean,
like, how would the way it ended?
Yeah, you know what? It went on pretty long, but it's something we all grew up with, and for it to end finally, it's a little bit sad.
I'll let you know when I get there, because I marathoned I read like 180 chapters since Friday. It was a really slow weekend. One thing I've always noticed, and it just always bugged me about Naruto, and I realize it as I'm reading it now, and I've been keeping it up with it weekly. Yeah, there are points where I just kind of want to stop reading. Like, if I was keeping up with reading weekly, I would have been like, no, I'm done. I'm not reading this for another year.
But that's what I did. I would read once every 3 months just to see where it got, because I couldn't.
I would read every chapter, but honestly, the thing that I was gonna say is that it's like the plan, it's just like he makes his story so needlessly complicated and convoluted, and it's not that I don't get what's going on, it's just that I see that it's just like, oh, now everything's related to everything, and oh my god, you think you beat the big bad, well, I had three more forms. It's like Frieza Saga all over. It's like, I don't
care. Frieza Saga was so great.
But if we're gonna talk about something that does that, but it's much, much worse, that's Bleach right now.
Yes.
Bleach should have ended like 5 years ago.
Soul Society.
Yeah, Bleach could have been just Soul Society arc, and everyone would be like, wow, that is a really good anime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no. It just kept continuing.
I kept jumping in our dreams.
What was the arc right before this one? See, I don't
know. Guacamundo arc?
It could have ended there.
Honestly, I stopped reading in the middle of Guacamundo.
They all came back.
Isn't it the previous captains that were hollowish? I don't know.
Or isn't the Arrancar arc?
Let us just not talk about Bleach. Bleach is the weakest.
Just to mention, it felt like they were just repeating it, because like the Soul Society, oh, we have to go save...
Back again.
We have to go save her, what's her name? Rukia. Once that was done, you got the big bad. They could have done an end fight, that would have been great. But then you've got the whole Arrancar and them going to the evil zone or whatever. And it was just the same thing. Oh, go save that girl now. It's like, too much rinse and repeat. Yeah.
The whole point, okay, was for us to follow Ichigo through all the stages of his life. His Shinigami, his Hollow, his Quincy.
Hasn't, like, not even a year passed?
He's got... probably next time... Maybe next time he's gonna be god mode.
Yeah, this is too much.
Like Dragon Ball.
Dragon Ball was a joy. Dragon Ball was what? It was 42 books.
Yeah, well.
I think Bleach is way past that right now.
Also, Dragon Ball came out in the 80s.
Yeah, and it was so good.
And it for the time, at least.
Well, yeah,
you know what? It could have been a bit more concise, but you'd think that everyone would have learned that. But I feel like Bleach is like a cash grab. You know, it's just like, just really stretching it out. It could have
been. So you're hoping that they're going to pull like a Naruto and they need to end that immediately?
Well, Naruto ended at 700 chapters. Yeah. I don't know where Bleach is at right now.
It's
a bit behind. Maybe a year.
It's a good few years behind.
Yeah.
But
it's definitely the weakest out of the big three, being One Piece, Bleach,
and Naruto. It's no longer one of the big three.
Yeah, it lost.
Toriko became the new big three.
So now that Naruto's gone, what are going to be the three?
Sequel Naruto series.
Well, you know what? That's it. They have one more, what is it, a movie or something?
Yeah.
Just to kind of wrap up the end, or actually, you know, take chapter 700 and kind of, you know, bridge the gap and show us a bit more, because chapter 700 didn't show anything.
It was pretty garbage. It's just like, we'll skip an undisclosed number of years, and here you go. Yeah,
it was very unfulfilling. I mean, no matter...
Everybody was happy, and all the parries that you thought would happen, happened.
Because... No matter what way you would have ended Naruto, I don't think anyone would have been happy.
Well, it's like...
Because Sakura's a dumb bitch.
Whoa!
Language!
that's a bit crazy. I was going to say, bringing up an old anime, School Rumble, I don't know if you guys have ever seen it. I know Seb has over here. It's one of the shows where, in the end, I was probably happier had I not ever read or seen the last chapters, because the whole crux of it is, like, anyone can end up with anybody, and no matter who you wanted it to, no one can be happy. And there's so many characters that so many people would not be happy.
He ends up with the rich blonde girl. It's great. I feel bad for Yakumo.
But anyways, I mean, Naruto had to end. No matter what way it would have ended, some people would not have been happy, so...
Some people were like, yeah, it's done.
Yeah.
The chapter's
done, and they need to release that.
The only manga that keeps going.
Whatever.
Well, the movie should be coming out soon anyway, so... Well, not here anyway.
Well, you know, to kind of...
Branch it out.
Fill out what we didn't get.
And you never know, because it still hasn't been released as a, like, manga volume. Like, it hasn't been, like, put together as a volume where he'll probably write a whole... end word and a whole foreword and a whole bunch
of... not that kind of end word.
That kind of thing. And there'll be like a lot of little liner notes along the pages, like they normally have in manga volumes.
Oh, so. he could have a whole encyclopedia for the series.
And it still wouldn't make up for that last chapter.
You're full of, like, you know, everything that was missing, all the stuff you was thinking
every
about.
Every jutsu should have a power level next to it, and just like, this is how much chakra I would use. 1,000 chakra.
That's what the games are for.
But, yeah, you know what? End of an era. It's good to see it end. Goodbye, Naruto.
I couldn't say it was a dignified death, but at least it's dead.
It's done.
That's good.
At least One Piece keeps going. That's the only thing that's consistently great.
Yeah. I don't know how he does it.
Doing everything and getting himself sick. Seriously. Very often.
No sleep, no rest.
No weekends.
No daughter time. I think he has a daughter, right?
Yes. I'm surprised he made time for that to make that. He made time to make that.
Can you imagine One Piece is his soul at the end?
Okay. Wow. You're going into crazy territories. As for me, I've been catching up with Elementary, which started about 2 weeks ago, so the first two episodes are out. And it's season 3. So at the end of season 2, Sherlock Holmes basically goes and joins... Spoilers, whatever. He goes and joins MI6, and Joan Watson wants to go out and get her own apartment, so the whole, like, mental instability arc you might be playing out over the next season, you think it's gonna happen. And then we start season 3, and it's like, oh yeah, that 8 months later, Joan's doing good, and Sherlock's back, and he has a new protege, and he basically is like, you know what? I realized I didn't need you. I needed the relationship that we had, so that's what I'm doing with the new girl. So, yeah.
Lucy Liu, she's gonna lose her only TV show.
No, actually, it's a whole, like, now the protege doesn't like Lucy Liu, Joan Watson, so they're gonna have to have their moments, and she has to start trusting him again because he's a brilliant mind. But overall, you know, it's a good start to the season. I'm looking forward to where they're going. They've done some pretty interesting things in the show so far, like with Moriarty and the whole concept of, like, the procedural Sherlock show. So I'm enjoying it, and I'm looking forward to season 3. So that's one thing.
I definitely have to get into that. I've seen a few episodes, and it looks really good. They do a good job. So that's definitely a series I need.
There's other shows you should really be watching first.
Seriously.
Yes, I know.
There's so many.
So many. Also, recently I finished Arrow Season 1, and I'm gonna put it this way, it's one of those things you see, like, with the first seasons, they're sometimes very enjoyable, but they're by no means, it's a good show. I would not say Arrow Season 1 was good by any means. It was okay, and very enjoyable, very entertaining, but there was just a few things that maybe, I hear in Season 2 gets better, and since I just started Season 2, they're introducing more characters, and I hear there's, like, the backdoor pilot for The Flash and things. things like that. So yeah,
back doors.
And I've talked with other people, and they're like, yeah, season two, like, they took everything that was wrong with the first season and basically made it better. So that's a lot of what I've been doing recently.
I'll say this much, though. Like, if you take, like, Smallville in comparison to Arrow, Arrow's done a lot better as a starting first season than something like Smallville. Smallville was a little too, like, meteor freak of the week. This, they did a bit better, but yeah, you could still see that they were trying to build it up and they didn't know where to really go at the start.
Yeah, after 10 years of doing Smallville, you would hope that they have some idea of how to do this now.
But you know what? Gotham's doing great.
Yes!
First season, you know, it didn't fall in that trap where it's garbage.
It's good. I would say, like I said,
yeah, like, I really enjoy it.
Eight episodes are out currently. 7 or 8 episodes. I've only seen the first 7, I think. I didn't see this week's episode. There's still a lot of time for them to screw it up, because there are some shows that start off really good, and halfway through the season, they just kind of forget what they wanted to do, and you're just like, okay. But, so we'll see with Gotham. I mean, like, I'm enjoying it now.
So far, so good.
Still reserving judgment till the full season completely, but so far, I've enjoyed every episode I've watched, though the only thing I can say is that maybe they're connecting people a little bit too much now.
Agreed.
So, we'll see about that. So we'll see about that. Like I said, not everyone has to know everybody.
It's a small town, you know, yeah. There's only 1,000 people, right?
That's basically a bit of what I've been up to recently. And Seb, you?
Well, watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is...
So good.
So good.
Who is not watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
I'm gonna point my finger towards someone.
Yes, on the audio podcast, right?
Exactly. Everybody point towards them, because they're gonna know.
Point and boo.
Boo! Boo.
Yeah, no, it's me.
First Community, now Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
It makes no sense.
And he enjoyed Big Bang Theory, like, a lot.
Yeah, too much bazinga from this guy. Yeah.
I haven't watched in a long time.
Yeah, you didn't need to bring that into the podcast, guys. Come on.
There's so many better shows.
Anyway, what else?
Brooklyn Nine-Nine is amazing. The cast, impeccable. You know, Captain Holt is probably the best character this season so far.
And yeah, 5 episodes, and they've just given him so much more to do.
Especially with his nemesis.
Oh, yeah. It works so well. You would not think, because, I mean, the cast is not...
Your typical pretty people.
It's not a super well-known cast.
Yeah, most of them aren't known actors and everything.
But they work so well, and for people who don't like Andy Samberg, you will like him in Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah. Because it's like they toned him down to a very acceptably enjoyable level.
Yeah, because he has his moments where he's way over the top.
Yeah.
Yes.
But overall, I think Andy Samberg is a very enjoyable character in Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yes.
And the cast that they surrounded him with work very, very well with him.
They have such a great chemistry together.
Exactly. Yeah. It honestly, my favorite show this season for, was it fall 2014?
Yeah.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine, that's my show.
Yeah, well, like, live action, like, live comedy, like, comedy-wise, you know, it's probably the only show that's really that great. Like, I haven't seen anything else that made me laugh as much. I don't know about you guys.
Well, it's one of the shows that make me laugh consistently on average per episode. I think I get the most laughs per minute in this show than I do from other shows.
I love pausing it, rewinding, just to see that moment again, because it's sounds comedic like, genius.
It really is. And right now, there's no, like, overarching story arcs or anything like that. It's just a fun week-to-week show with, like, you know, good old character threads going through and a lot of funny things that just keep happening.
Well, Scully and Hitchcock.
Oh, my God. They've given them more to do this season,
they're
too.
They're so stupid, though.
You're my best friend. What?
You think that they reach, like, the bottom of the barrel, but they just keep going.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's... I don't know.
Oh, God.
It's just, they're so... When you think they've hit rock bottom, they just keep going. Like, it's, those two.
Every character has their moment also. Yeah. So it's not just one person. It's everyone has, like, at least an episode where they do something.
Yeah, and even Scully and Hitchcock get character moments.
Yeah,
everyone. So, it's honestly, I don't know how we ended up with such a great show on Fox, of all places.
And no one's talking about Terry Crews, but Terry Crews is great.
Yeah,
awesome. He is great in that show.
He's the most recognizable, probably, person on that show. Other than Andy Samberg.
Yeah.
And Andre, because he was in a lot of cop dramas before.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Actually, most of the people I didn't know except for Terry Crews and Andy Samberg. Honestly, when you guys first told me about the show, and you're like, oh yeah, Andy Samberg's in it. I'm like, I don't know. And then I watch it, and it's a great show, and you guys should probably definitely be watching and catching up if you haven't already.
Kevin.
All right, stop pointing at me.
Actually, no one was pointing at you, just so we have that clear.
Sheesh. Directing it to me.
I'm also watching Constantine.
Constantine?
Yes.
Constantine. Is that how they pronounce it on the show?
Yes. It's actually Constantine.
Oh, yeah. Just making sure.
It's everything that Supernatural was before it went down the deep end. It's really, it's every week, you know, you have your new demon, your new ghost or whatnot, okay? And, like, his way of handling the situations. It's a really fun show, and it really reminds me of Supernatural, like, season 1 and 2, where, you know, like, every episode had their own, like, demon of the week.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can sense that there is a story behind it, okay? Where you just, like, scratching the surface now because it's only 3 episodes out. But if you really enjoyed Supernatural before season 5, I think, it's definitely a must-watch.
Okay. Well, I heard about the show is that they replaced one of the actresses after the pilot. Is that a very awkward transition?
No, not at all. Because they didn't replace the actress.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they pretty much said that, you know, the girl just didn't want to be part of the Supernatural world, so she's just like, peace off. But she left a map.
From what I heard, at least from a varying sources, is that she's a character created for the show, and people are like, we don't need she didn't test well with audiences, and that's why they refilmed part of the they reshot part of the ending so that she just kind of leaves and they bring in someone.
Yeah, she was kind of annoying, but I like the new girl that's in there.
Alright, that works. Anything else you guys want to talk about? Alright, join us on the next segment where we're going to talk about Big Hero 6.
I'm not going to be there.
Welcome back to our main segment where we're going to talk about Big Hero 6 and Interstellar. We're going to first start off with the movie Big Hero 6 and our thoughts on it. For this thoughts on it, there's me, Andrew.
Kevin.
And
Ali.
Seb won't be joining us for this one, or he might join in every now and then. We'll see about it as we go along.
Even watch it.
I'm probably going to be trolling a bit.
You probably. But as we go along. So I guess a brief synopsis of the movie. Our main protagonist, Hero Hamada, is a 13, 14-year-old graduate from high school. And he participates in robot fights and wrecks at them, apparently, too, in a really fun scene at the beginning. His older brother, whose name I forgot. Does anyone remember the older brother?
Tadashi!
There we go. His older brother, Tadashi, unhappy with this whole fact and thinking that Hiro could do better with his life, brings him to his robotics lab and shows him a whole bunch of cool science experiments and the thing he's been working on, Baymax, a big medical robot that is there to help people. And so things happen. His brother convinces him by bringing him to this lab that he should try to come to school here. Hiro works on a project that gets great reviews at the fair, and he decides to go to school. Something happens. A series of events leads him and a bunch of people from the robotics lab that his brother worked at to become heroes and solve a mystery to some extent. So, Kevin, your thoughts on the movie?
I definitely enjoyed it. It was really good. The 3D was great. I saw it on IMAX. It really wasn't necessary to see it in... not IMAX, in 3D.
AVX.
Yeah, AVX.
Yeah, the 3D was not
good at all for it. Not on par as things like How to Train Your Dragon. But the characters were really good. I liked a lot of the names. You had, like, Go-Go, one of the characters. Wasabi. And they do make fun as to why they're getting the nicknames. Honey Lemon. And,
Fred.
Yeah, Fred.
And then Fred.
But Fred's the guy who apparently gives the nicknames to everybody, so...
But he didn't give himself one.
Nope.
Not anyway, maybe in the next movie.
Definitely the voice actor that I was able to recognize immediately was Fred.
TJ Miller.
Yeah, TJ Miller. He's done a lot of voice. He was in How to Train Your Dragon, a lot of other movies as well, so definitely recognizable in that aspect.
Which is weird because everyone should recognize Wasabi, who's Damon Wayans Jr., but these are shows that Kevin doesn't watch.
Oh, well, I wouldn't have guessed because I would have been like, oh, that voice sounds familiar, but I would never.
Had his trademark scream, you know, like girly scream.
Yeah.
They had that in the car chase scene. You could tell that was Damon Wayans Jr. with his, you know. You know, it was very... You could tell it was him.
Honestly, the aunt was the one I had an easier time recognizing. Played by Maya Rudolph from SNL fame.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was her, but I'm like, I know I heard that voice before.
The movie was really good. It played played the characters very well. The ending made it feel a lot like they're either going to pull something similar to How to Train a Dragon, where they're going to do a TV series. I hope not.
Well,
I think if they do a sequel, I'd like it a lot better.
Yeah, it's open enough that they could do anything with it. Like, you know, this was more to establish the characters, establish the universe, and you could go anywhere with this, with how they ended it. Like, I mean, we can't even talk about what they would do in sequels without spoiling...
Well, I have probably a spoiler part towards the end of the discussion.
Yeah. Going back to that 3D part, the 3D... Oh,
you both saw it in 3D?
Yeah, I don't think they had it in non-3D.
I did. When I went to my showing, there wasn't 3D. I didn't get glasses. I went to the AVX, yeah.
Okay.
I saw it in AVX, the big theater on the main floor. So, and they didn't give me 3D glasses or anything, and it wasn't in 3D.
Did you just forget the glasses? Because I think you have to grab it, like, immediately when you walk
in. No, well, they give it to you, usually.
You can usually tell if a movie's being shown in 3D.
Yeah, because you wouldn't be able to
see it. There's a slight... This off... sets
like two images,
so
but anyway, yeah, it was unnecessary like to watch it in 3D, but the movie is beautiful.
The art is amazing. The San Fran Tokyo,
yeah,
so good. They do a good shot, they do a good wide shot of showing the whole thing,
yeah,
and they kind of hide like the background and the clouds, but it's really, really well done. I'm very surprised how well they merged the kind of like two cultures
really
together.
Nice. Oh, it's and I mean, if you're gonna compare it to the last Disney movie, which was
Frozen.
I liked it a lot more than I liked Frozen. I liked Frozen, but Big Hero 6
more artsy, more
a lot more.
Yeah.
Maybe because it's more of a boy movie. I don't know if that's it.
I think it's Disney's attempt at saying, "Hey, we need more boys to like our brand."
Exactly. We're still making movies for boys. Don't forget about us.
Yeah.
I liked, especially when they took the IP from Marvel. So that's
what's cool too.
Well, that
because
was a step in that, yeah.
They bought Marvel, and you were wondering when was Disney gonna do something
live action.
Yeah, when were they gonna do a Marvel movie?
Yeah,
and they basically took the IP for it. So
yeah,
what I liked is that they kind of showed all the characters' kind of like talent in the when Tadashi is showing the hero kind of like, oh, well, look what I do, and this
and everyone has a different discipline.
Yeah.
You could tell, like, Tadashi was, like mechanical engineering.
Yeah.
You had Honey, who was more of a...
chemical? Yeah, chemical engineering.
Yeah.
You had Wasabi, who was dealing with a lot more lasers and lights. I don't know what that would fall into.
Actually, Tadashi would be more robotics.
Yeah.
And
Gogo is more
engineer,
engineering and aerodynamics and things like that.
And I like how they incorporated all the power, their sort of powers from what they've worked. So that was neat. Except Hiro kind of built armor for his brother's robot and starts riding him like a Yoshi. I found it really weird.
Yeah, it was weird that he gave himself no extra powers. Let's say he just had a suit of like body armor.
I think he was focusing so much on other people. They all had their disciplines, right? He didn't really have a discipline yet. And so that seems like something that they might explore in future avenues. Like maybe he'll create upgrades for himself to be more useful in a fight other than using Baymax's power.
Yeah, because without Baymax, he's useless.
Yeah, exactly.
Essentially.
And then I liked the scene that they did when he's like the he shows this is the final kinks of Baymax.
Baymax?
Baymax. What am I saying? I don't know. Baymax. But you have the whole scene where they're flying whatever reminded me way too much of Iron Man. Like, through and through. Like, oh, going too high. Oh, falling down.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I heard more people compare that to How to Train Your Dragon than to...
You know what? Yes, I
to...
as well, actually.
It's a swap. Yeah, but I mean, it's, you know, same studio.
So that scene was like, I think the reason why I thought more Iron Man, because Baymax just is like Iron Man.
Iron Man suit, yeah.
But definitely Baymax steals the whole movie with this like bubble-ish character, like just the way
on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you rate your painting? he was a very enjoyable character. Like, everyone was, the whole cast, it was a fun cast, but Baymax.
It was definitely Baymax and Heroes movie.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
They were the emotional core of the movie. And the other characters are introduced. They do things, and they are they are no more really than caricature cutouts really at this point. But at least they're nerds with cool science abilities, and then their suits reflect that, obviously.
Welcome to nerd school.
Yeah, and it's you know what? It's great that this movie is able to mark itself in a year where you had so many superhero movies.
Yeah.
This year was super saturated with superhero movies, and even though we got, three or four?
We got three Marvel movies, in theory.
I really like Big Hero 6, and I would still put it in my top of the year.
This year for Marvel, in terms of movies, animated or otherwise, just they hit it off the chart with all three movies that were released this year.
Well, that's the thing. This isn't backed by Marvel. The story is there, but it's fully done by the Disney studio, so that's why this is great. It has some input from Marvel, but as far as from the credits, it's Disney studio that did it, and they did a great job, actually. One thing I have to also point out is you see the whole science fair scene, and they're showing a big pan view of all the different the different things that are being invented and stuff. I like that they're showing a lot more kids. You can look into these things. I was able to notice that one of the scenes, they quickly have a Steve Jobs character in the corner, just
around. A lot of Easter eggs.
Yeah, I missed movie. A lot of them too.
It's because you said you recognized TJ Miller as the voice actor, but his initial costume when they're in his house is the dragon that he rides in How to Train Your Dragon.
Oh wow! You're right. I didn't fully notice that.
That's Barf.
Or at least a facsimile.
It wasn't Barf that he rode. It was the twin head.
No, but nonetheless, if it is Barf, then
I don't remember. I haven't seen
Barf was the fact.
But you see, there are a lot of Easter eggs. There's
a lot of references to old school Japanese mecha.
Oh, definitely.
But things like that.
And there's a lot of other Disney's. I think there's a small Wreck-It Ralph poster when Baymax first uses the rocket arm.
Yeah.
And they destroy the wall. The statue that he destroys is the prince from Frozen. So there's little things here and there. And the big spoiler alert, let's say, the big cameo. I guess it's not an Easter egg because it's part of the story.
Stan Lee is Fred's dad.
That was
you see a painting at one point,
but you'll see there is a Stan Lee cameo in terms of that painting, which is pretty. It's like, oh look, there's the cameo.
Which is funny because you didn't think there would be one
animated movie.
Yeah, and you just saw his face. You're like, oh, okay, that's it.
Yeah.
Stanley, it's done. But you get that little tidbit at the end.
Yeah, so stick around till the end of the movie, obviously. There is, most Marvel movies, or at least comic book movies these days, there is something at the end of the credits.
I very much enjoyed the soundtrack as well, actually. I wanna get the album.
Why is Fall Out Boy still making music?
Of course.
Fall Out Boy? Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, the main theme, Immortals, is Fall Out Boy.
Okay, I liked it.
Which is surprising, because it was Fall Out Boy? You guys, they're still together? They're still doing stuff? So I was surprised.
Disney money, I guess.
I guess that must be it. I very much enjoyed the soundtrack as well.
Is there anything you didn't like, per se?
To be honest, I enjoyed the whole... I was able to figure out the story really quickly, but that's just, I think...
You're not a kid.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think it works well for the kids. I think I've just seen too many cartoons or too many stories that I'm just like, I know where this is going.
If I was 10 years old, this would be my Toy Story.
Basically.
I think so.
Yeah. And way better animated now.
Yeah, okay. But Toy Story was... It still is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I think if I was a 10-year-old and I saw this in the theaters, this would be my Toy Story. I mean, I'm sure...
that nostalgia thing you'll come back to.
I'm sure this movie is gonna turn into three others.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Because, for me, my Disney movie when I was growing up is Aladdin. That one really stuck. So, no, I could see this one being, something that would stick to the younger generation.
Yeah, and it speaks to them, technology being such a focal part of society and, kids get into technology so soon nowadays, I think this will stick to them more because it resonates with them a lot more. Robots.
On that note, though, I also think that the whole fact that they're showing store, and you know, it's cool to be a science nerd. It's there are cool things you can do if you know, science is cool. Science can be awesome, and not just, you know, like, boring, nerdy stuff. They're showing them that fun side, so maybe this movie will even convince kids to go and want to become...
Engineers
and scientists, or at least attempt it.
And transcend the fifth dimension and use gravity to make messages.
You're hilarious there, buddy. You're hilarious. Anything else you want
to
bring up?
I want to know where you guys think they're going to go with a sequel. Because at the end of the movie, you kind of see them in their gear and they go, Now we're called Big Hero 6.
Yeah.
Oh, even in the credits, too. They're showing little snippets and scenes, too.
And where do you think this is going
to
go?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, I'm afraid that they're going to pull a bit of like a How to Train Your Dragon, the Riders of Berk thing. I think they might look into doing a TV show, especially since it's Disney-driven. And I hope they don't. I'd rather they just work on actually having a sequel. And
it's done by a different studio.
But if it's backed by Disney...
It could be okay. It's not going to be anything great, but they also need to sometimes put these shows there to keep interest in these things.
True.
And so kids can, like, come back to it and be like, oh, you know, man, Big Hero 6 was a great movie. Oh, cool, there's a TV show. I'm going to watch a TV show. And then the TV show tides you over until the next movie comes out.
Yeah, it could definitely be a TV show.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a sequel.
It could work as a TV show.
No, I think it's definitely going to be a sequel.
I think it's going to be a sequel, and I wouldn't be surprised if you had evil Baymax. Because in this one, when Baymax, spoilers, when Baymax rescues them, you know, uses rocket punch to get them out of the portal, he leaves Tadashi's card.
Yeah.
Meaning Baymax is stuck with the karate moves and whatever still in his chest in the portal.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right.
Come back, yeah.
So, wait, didn't they remove it though?
No.
You're right.
Because he didn't even know the card came out. He found the card, Tadashi's card, like...
in the hand later
on. Yeah, in the hand.
So you're right, that could be a...
So it's possible, you know, that's kind of a reminder to Hiro of, like, the mistake he made.
Yeah.
You know, going nuts. And, you know, that could come back to bite him in the ass kind of thing.
Hmm.
I mean, not necessarily, because, I mean, Baymax was only evil because...
his parameters were gone.
But he listens to Hiro. He basically responds to whoever is controlling him.
Yeah, so but that opens that possibility for the sequel, Evil Baymax. A TV show that it's, you know, it's like having an Avengers TV show, but minus all the lore. You know, they'll just fight like villains of the week, and it might actually do something with the characters.
And I mean, they have the comic books, right? So there's probably stuff they can pull from.
But I'd have to double check the comic books, but I think they loosely based it on the.
Yeah, it's possible.
No, the comic book, from what I hear, was not very good. At least the opening part. Disney really did some magic on it and made it a more interesting, more fun, like, the characters are better. Obviously, it comes from a comic because of the names of some of the characters, you know, like Johnny Lemon, Go-Go, Tamago, Wasabi, No Ginger.
They stayed that, like, that's just nicknames, but, I like...
Do you ever find out, they never say their real names.
I'm calling it now, 6 movies in a season.
Just like Community.
Yeah. I think they can easily make a sequel to this. The way it's left, it's not like, say, Wreck-It Ralph, where I'm just like, I don't know if you would really have a second movie to that.
No, not
because
really.
The first one feels so complete. But you know, like, you kind of think of that about, like, hey, look, even Toy Story 1, the first movie, it ends, and you're like, you know,
that's a very good
complete story.
Yeah, but I mean, I think Wreck-It Ralph is different from.
Oh no, but I'm saying Toy Story. So, and you think at the end of Toy Story they can't do it, so they made 2 more movies and they did something amazing each time with them. Big Hero 6 leaves it open ended enough that, you know, a sequel totally doable, and I hear. For now, it's been performing decently well. So
yeah, it was number 1 at the box office,
and it's a good kids movie. Parents won't be too bored in it, and you know, it's a kind of movie that you don't have to think too hard. Also,
no,
I mean, like you, Kevin, I figured out what was going on pretty much early, and I'm like, oh well, obviously it has to be so and so, or at least they pretty much show you, look who could be the villain.
Yeah, so if you have a chance to watch it, definitely go see it. I'm sure everyone who's into, you know, this kind of movie has already seen it, probably on opening weekend.
If you're into the Marvel movie scene, go see it. If you like the Disney movie
thing. Well, before we give our ratings, I just have a few things I'd like to bring up also. There are some really great moments in this movie, like, that had me, and in the theater I saw it with people laughing each time, the fist bump Baymax does when he first talks about the fist bump is one of the cutest things, and it was hilarious each time it happened.
Just his mannerisms, like, just trying to walk.
Baymax is the star of this movie. Yeah.
It's like a child learning how to do things.
But he knows what to do, but then he just looks at it for a while. Yeah. And those pauses work perfectly. Not too long, but enough to be like, ha ha ha.
The whole, like, you guys brought up San Francisco, just the aesthetic design that they chose to go with, the melding of those two worked beautifully. The way they did it felt really natural, felt very believable in terms of how those, like, places were built out. They didn't seem too cartoony funny enough that I say.
Just a side thing, what were those balloons for?
I think they were supposed to be similar to kind of the floating balloons that you would get in Tokyo, but I think it looked more like they were wind turbines that would pick up the...
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
I think it was for power and energy. That's what, if I remember that.
Yeah, that's cool.
But I like how they were like big fishes, and then like they were able to get to the top, and you see like the sunset, and they definitely did well with colors. Like.
The villain was actually kind of like, you know, scary in a way, like when you look at it, like for kids, at least in a kid sense, but they made him very villainous, they made him very evil, they made him very dark and ominous, like when, like that chase sequence in the middle of the movie that they have, you feel like, I mean, other than the fact that it's the main characters, you feel like, holy cow, something bad could really happen. And, you know, it's also in these scenes that you get to see a lot of everybody's personalities little by little, so they got a little bit of few things to do. A few of them have some catchphrases, like Gogo's woman up.
That was good.
That was funny. I found that hilarious. And I feel at least, even though Baymax and Hero are the main focus, and most of the time in the movie is devoted to those characters, the side characters still get a moment to fail, a moment to shine, and to do cool things overall. So at least that was good. It felt like, they were just kind of there because they cared for the guy, but at points it's just like, you know, they actually felt more than just two-dimensional characters. They actually felt like fully realized to some extent. And like you guys said, the animation was brilliant. It was just great. I didn't see it in 3D, so for me,
I don't think it wouldn't have made much of a difference.
And you could tell some of those sequences were straight, like the flying sequence was for the 3D, obviously.
And no, they didn't do as good of a job.
It wasn't like Spider-Man or anything.
It was Spider-Man. Like, even How to Train a Dragon, I was immersed with that. This, not so much.
Not at all. It was unnecessary.
Yeah.
And before the movie, I remember them like, watch out, Baymax is coming, he's gonna take over everything. And I'm just like, nah, there's no way I'm gonna really care. The thing is just kind of cute, but I'm like, it's just a, I don't think I'll care that much about getting a Baymax toy or anything. And as that movie is going on, I'm just like, fudge. 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 And at the end of the movie, it's like, I'm going to need to get me some Big Hero 6 merch now, because that was an enjoyable movie. And I already did. I picked up one of the Funko Pop Baymaxes, so I'm happy about that. Ratings on 10? I guess I'll go first.
4.
Well, that was Sebastian. That was
4. What's up?
Good characters. A decent emotional story. Though towards the end, the whole motivations of the villain were a bit contrived. But at the end, it's a kid's movie. It's forgivable. So I'll give it 8. I want a lot of Baymax merch out of 10.
I liked it a lot. To me, it felt like a 9 out of 10. It just had everything working really well with it. Again, the 3D was unnecessary, so it's going to go well with Blu-rays and DVDs afterwards. It'll work well on its own. Yeah, no, I just 9 Baymax out of 10.
I'm not going to rate it. You know what? Go watch it. It's definitely one of the better movies this year. One of my favorites for sure.
Just give it a number rating, dude. Don't cop out. Don't cop out.
2 thumbs up. I give it 2 thumbs up. Definitely go watch it.
Way to ruin the scale.
Just go Ebert Alley over here. There's a short, actually, at the beginning of it called The Feast.
No, Feast. Just Feast.
Sorry. Just Feast. It was what, 10 minutes?
No.
You're 10 minutes.
It was a 5-minute short. Okay. I think it was a 5-minute short.
And it was fantastic. I like when Disney does this. They did it in the past before. I forget which movie it was with, but there was, like, The Plane.
Or The Plane. The short. Basically, The Feast reminded me a lot of the first one I remember seeing earlier on, Paper Man, in front of Wreck-It Ralph. The one in front of Wreck-It Ralph.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay, that's what it was.
It had that very nice, kind of classic-y, but different-ish art style. It was very well animated. It was beautiful. And, I noticed, like, in the background, it's like, the dog is so cute, but there's things going on in the background, and you're just like, oh, man. And it was just a really emotional story. I really liked it. I liked that it didn't end sadly. How I would describe it, it was like, imagine if the first 10 minutes of Up had a happy ending.
But I liked it because it was like, the perspective was always at the bowl, the dog's bowl. And then when the bowl is sometimes not there, it's either like, the dog's eating out of a carton, is eating out of something. And one of the scenes where he's just like, there's no bowl, and you're just like, what's going on? His mouth just opens, and then like, table flips due to them watching football, and all the food just falls in the dog's mouth. It was so cute. I will say, I wish I had this dog's metabolism, because all the amount of garbage he was eating, I'm like, are they going to show him getting fat?
He never gets bigger.
No.
He stays the whole thing.
Nope.
From start to
finish. Well, to be fair, he was probably already at the end of his growth cycle. I feel like the thing happened maybe early on over, like, maybe a few years.
He doesn't even get fat.
No.
Nothing.
Meatballs and spaghetti.
He maneuvers himself in a very many ways to get that food.
Eggs and
bacon. It's not made easy for him, except for when it's made easy for him. But that dog, yeah.
So I will say that was a nice, like, appetizer to that whole Big Hero 6. It was really good.
Oh, yeah. It was definitely 2 thumbs up.
Definitely.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to bring up?
That's it for Big Hero 6 and Feast.
Join us shortly when we will be talking about Interstellar.
It's a space movie.
Alright, welcome back, and now it's time for a brief discussion on Interstellar. So just a brief synopsis. Humans have ruined, I guess, Earth to some extent, and humanity to some extent, so it's implied that a lot of humans are gone, and that all we have ruined the Earth so much that our humanity is about to die, so we need lots of farmers to farm. And our main character, Coop, is a farmer who is an ex-engineer, and he gets essentially tasked to go on this mission to potentially find new worlds for the current humanity to go live on. He's joined by Anne Hathaway and a few other people, and they go through a wormhole, and things happen.
Science!
Space!
That is a brief synopsis.
Down lots of space.
So, Seb, your thoughts on the movie?
I enjoyed it.
Anything else you'd like to say?
No.
Okay, Ali, your thoughts on the movie?
It was very confusing.
Anything you'd like to elaborate on?
Christopher Nolan. This is what he does.
he takes your mind and he does bad things.
He does very bad things to you.
Yes, because making you think is the worst thing
ever. Some people don't want to think when they watch movies. You just want the movie to end, and you're like, woohoo, I understood that movie. Whereas this one ends, and you're like, damn, too many questions.
We were definitely, like, getting out of the movie, and we're just, like, talking, discussion, what's going on, discussion.
Last hour of the movie just went in so many directions. It could have ended at any point. It just, you know, kind of like how Inception ended, and you're like,
what is real?
Yeah, is he alive or is he dead? Which one is it?
Was it all a dream?
And so this ends, and you're like, huh, what just happened? I don't know. Too many questions.
I enjoyed it because it makes you really think, and also I felt that it does give you some kind of emotional connection. Also, in terms of the movie, like, you invested yourself emotionally. Well, I did, but I don't know. I can't talk for everyone, but.
Well, I mean, it also makes you think about time and yourself and your family and your friends.
And how insignificant it all is, because we're just a grain in the beach.
Yeah. Well, we're nothing. We're nothing.
nothing.
That's it, we're nothing. In
compared the to the giganticness of the universe.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course we're nothing in the comparison to that. We're like mites. Actually, I think we might even be smaller.
But I'm sure a lot of, you know, different people are going to take out different things out of this movie. Yeah. I could definitely see people not liking this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And I could see people coming out of this movie where you're like, wow, my perspective on life has changed because of this movie.
Isn't that in a way the marks of a good movie to some extent? That one that kind of makes you think, it makes you challenge your perceptions of reality.
And it opens a discussion also.
And opens...
some people don't like that. Some people, you know, you just want to watch a movie.
That's why Anna Sandler's movies make tons of money when they come out.
Blarg.
Wow.
Yeah,
not a good comparison.
Yeah, let's not talk
about
that.
It's definitely a good movie. Great? No. It was very atmospheric. You definitely got drawn in. They use sound very well to get you really in tune with the scenes that they have. Like, it's quiet when the scenes need to be quiet, when they're in space. Especially when it's the perspective. Like, okay, they're filming outside. It's quiet. And you're like...
Mind you, we all saw this in IMAX.
Yes.
In real IMAX.
Yes, 70mm.
Yeah, we all saw this in...
I have some disagreements about the sound mix to some extent, because there are points where I could not hear some of the words that people were saying. Like, the music was too loud at points. Well, I like the fact that in space it was quiet, because the big vacuumness, the coldness of space. But there are points where the soundtrack is coming in, like when one of the characters dies, and they say something as they're dying, but the music is so loud, I'm like, what? They said something important, I think? And you feel like there was an emotional beat there that was supposed to feel, but I didn't hear what was said.
Not necessarily. I think that, you know, just with everything that was going on, okay, they might have said things here and there, like probably just some technical jargon about, like, oh, I have to restart this and that, and then, like, go through this. But that doesn't really matter, because the atmosphere it creates is one of urgency, and, like, what they're really saying, okay, during those periods, doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things.
No, I think I know a few of the scenes that you're talking about, but I think it was just them repeating what they had already said, and it was just being drowned out because they're trying to get to the next scene. I don't think it was anything additional to what was not already said for those scenes. At least for that, what I've seen.
Well, the one I'm more talking about is the one where one of the characters dies in an explosion. Yeah. And right before that character dies, they say something, and everyone hears it in the movie, right? So the character is here because it's on the radio, but the sound was playing so loud because something bad was about to happen, and boom.
Well, yeah, because he just noticed something was wrong with the robot, but, you know, because it exploded, you know, pretty much. But, you know, he didn't really even need to know what he said, because by that time, we already knew that Dr. Man was actually...
Whoa.
Spoils.
Whoa, we're not too crazy into spoilers. That's why I'm keeping things vague. But,
crazy.
In general, I enjoyed the movie a lot. I walked out of that theater and I didn't know what to think, in a sense. Like, there was just so much to take in. I didn't really have questions, and I'm gonna say it made sense, quote unquote, within the logic that the movie has presented, even though it does get a bit fantastical towards the end.
Yeah.
Because at the beginning of the movie, like, the first 2 hours of the movie is very hard science fiction, like, very... There's, like, some factual basis in what they're talking about. A lot of the science holds up, well, theoretically at least, from what I understand. And towards the end, they just kind of go, yeah, science, but emotions. And I'm like, okay. And I feel like that kind of plays a little bit with your perception of, like, what you're supposed to really take from this, because it feels like the movie kind of shifts gears, and I do and I don't have issues with those final parts. I kind of don't mind what they did with that, but I feel like the movie maybe was too long.
Where would you cut?
I feel like you could
in the first hour.
The thing is, this is a very high concept movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's meant to, like, you know, not many. It's like, this movie could be cut down for sure. Like, 2 hours and 50 minutes is really long. I mean, I didn't feel bad about that. It wasn't a thing that bothered me, like, immensely. It wasn't something like I was checking my watch every 5 minutes after the first hour to see when the movie was going to end. Yeah, it's no. It was the kind of thing that, like, I feel like the whole sequence there in the middle on the ice planet, like, a lot of that could have been.
Yeah, it was a bit drawn out.
That could have been cut down, like, and that you could have saved at least a good, because that was like a half hour sequence, and you could have cut out at least a good 10-15 minutes out of that easily. I mean, the whole issues are telegraphed even then, fairly early on. I mean, like, the moment you're out the planet, you're kind of like, I don't have a good feeling about this place, and it comes off fairly easily, and it's not very subtle, I find, at some points, but it was a bit too long, and I feel like they could have tightened it up a bit. I'm not saying cut everything, because it is also supposed to be this long, drawn-out, beautiful, traveling-through-space movie. A lot of the cinematography is great. The CG, at least, like, or whatever, like, they did, or the backgrounds are beautiful. Some of the shots they use are awesome, and it's good that those were drawn out, but, like, some of the emotional beats are just a little drawn out.
Speaking of shots, though, the aspect ratio was messing with me for some of the scenes, because you'd have the, like, you'd have some scenes where you have the full IMAX experience,
yeah,
and then you had scenes where you had, like, the black bars from top to bottom, and
that went back and forth.
Yeah. Well, the problem is you can't, from what I hear, Christopher Nolan wants to shoot it basically in IMAX, an IMAX movie, like, entirely, but that's not possible right now. So he has to do with what he can, so he's trying to, I think, more and more put in more IMAX as he can into these movies, but it's not something that's doable at the moment, so you will get that a lot.
His limitations, he's trying to do
the thing is, he's putting in as much as he can, so it becomes a lot more noticeable that there are aspect ratio changes, because, you know, like, you go back to some of, like, what was the last one he did with in IMAX? Was it The Dark Knight Rises? Or probably, The Dark Knight? Probably. Anyway, some of the movies with
was IMAX. Inception?
No, Inception was before the last Batman.
But, well, it was between. Anyway, one of the movies with IMAX, you know when an IMAX scene is coming because the aspect ratio does change. It's a lot, like, the screen is larger. The friend told me it's like you essentially can film on, like, maybe for 30 seconds with an IMAX camera. Those things weigh several hundred pounds. And the Royal is huge, and it uses up so quickly.
No, I fully understand, but that definitely affected.
Yeah, but I think it's just process of him.
Besides, it didn't really bother me the change of aspects. I guess it didn't affect me as much as it did to you.
Oh, yeah. No, it was probably. I've heard people mention that too. I mean, I wasn't paying attention to that kind of thing. Maybe
I was invested in the story and not really much. But like, oh no, the screen just got.
No, but I think it was noticeable enough. Yeah. Like the beginning, the first thing. Half hour of the movie, I thought it was like too gritty. I don't know if it's gritty or dark.
It's lit very darkly. Like, yeah, you can assume, right, that because there's so much dust on Earth.
Yeah, it's probably cloudy.
It's cloudy, and it's supposed to feel dirty. It's supposed to feel grimy.
It kind of bothered me. I don't know. Because, like, the scenes in the house where it's dark, you can barely see anything.
Yeah, and it definitely got better later on. Like, you saw everything properly, but it was really dark, definitely at the start.
But that's the reality they're living in, you know? It's dusty, it's dirty.
Yeah, but it's still
and then you
dusty
can see everything later.
No, I
in
still
the future.
No, I mean, but it's an artistic choice in the sense that Earth is old, it's dirty, it's not, we've ruined it to some extent.
Everybody can only eat corn and drink corn beer.
Yeah. Corn. But all the other planets are very bright, they're vibrant to show that significant maybe new life. The water planet looks.
Yeah, I like vibrant. The water planet, which at all water.
But
the
it was still planet, but still it was ice. Very bright.
Well, yeah,
in comparison to
Earth. Color.
The ice planet also very bright. And even the later on, like the sand planet, also very bright in comparison.
What was lighting up the water planet?
The sun. One of the suns.
There's no sun to
the dilation.
There's just a black hole.
I don't know.
Although the black hole
it's the light that, like, I guess some light does escape from black holes. It's been scientifically we can't say proven, okay, because you can't really
conceptually
observe. But theoretically, okay, it is possible for light to escape, and it's very possible that the light around the
because it was hella bright
escapes.
Yeah,
it was hella bright on that planet.
Like I said, artistic choice for more likely than not.
Yeah.
Any other general impression?
I don't know. Do you want to kind of go through the?
I liked Cooper. He played his role, I think, really well.
Yeah.
Matthew McConaughey stepping stepping up his game.
Yeah, like, his acting chops were good in this one. Heck, the kid who plays Murph was, like, that was not one of your annoying kid actors. It was, like, decent acting. I was like, wow, this kid actor doesn't suck. I don't hate this character. I mean, like, it sucks that, you know, she's a 10-year-old girl, and the fact that she's like, oh, you're leaving me. And
that's how any 10-year-old
It's a 10-year-old reaction. Like, you can't fault her for that in any regards.
I like how she's really smart. She's smarter than, like, the people in the class. The father recognizes this, and, like, I like how he gets pulled into a teacher-parent interview. You and, like, is basically being told, like, you're teaching your kid wrong. And he's just like, you know what I'm gonna do?
You're teaching my kids
wrong. I'm gonna go to that baseball game with my daughter, and I think I'm gonna buy her popcorn. And the teachers are just like, so, like, no, I, like, definitely an attachment, definitely he recognizes that, like, the daughter is really smart.
Well, important to show the attachment between the daughter and the dad.
Which they did a great job.
For, like, the entire emotion, that later goes on throughout the movie.
The son,
I don't think he was meant to be anything more than
a farmer.
Forgettable.
Just honestly, like, that person who's accepted their fate, quote unquote, and is just living life as best as they can in the situation that they have.
I just like the only scene about with him though is just like they're trying to, like, drive off, and, like, they get a flat tire, and he's like, what about the tire? And they're just driving off. I'm like, all right,
we need to go get that drone that doesn't really do anything.
Well, he was gonna use it as spare parts for
life. Yeah.
He hacks it and takes it over.
I guess that's more to show his savvy.
Yeah.
His engineering savvy. Yeah.
Well, I was listening to some other podcasts, and they were talking about how apparently the script that Jonathan Nolan wrote and the changes are very different. Apparently, from what I remember hearing, there's supposed to be multiple space missions by multiple countries, and there's supposed to be a Chinese space station where the robots go rogue, and the whole thing is that there's a whole point where this Chinese station, they find, like, the secrets of time travel, and that they send the drone back by accident, and it turns out that's the drone that they find. And the movie becomes a very crazier in that.
I think that would have been interesting, but I don't think we would have thought as much.
That would have been way too convoluted.
You know what? Speaking of evil robots, I'm glad that they didn't fall into
that. Was also one of the
evil robot tropes.
Yeah.
And this one, I really enjoyed
Tars
and Case.
But that's the thing. Throughout the whole movie, because this has happened in so many other movies where the robots go rogue and they're evil, this could have happened in this movie.
And everything is basically pointing to that.
Exactly.
Everything, the way they move, the way that, like, how they sound ominous looking at times.
They look so potentially evil, you know?
Exactly. And the models of robots. Yeah, it's just the way they were constructed.
And their sense of humor is a bit...
Exactly, like, at any time you could have thought they would have went rogue and... That would have been a major plot point.
Like, I think that was one of the jokes from it. I was like, we're gonna, like, take you over.
That was the first joke.
I got slaves from my robot colony.
Yeah. And it was like, what was it? Another thing is like, it's like, yeah, I don't do what I want. I do what you tell me to.
Yeah. You know what? That could have been, I don't know if it would have been a cop-out, but I mean, it could have been a major plot point, and I'm glad they didn't go in that direction.
Yeah.
I think everyone enjoy TARS
a lot more. I feel like TARS and Cased by some proxy are, like, the two, after McConaughey as Coop, are, like, the next best characters, because I feel like they get the most character development after Coop.
Yeah,
even more so than, like, Anne Hathaway's as Dr. Brand. I feel like she kind of gets a bit underutilized to some extent in this movie.
I agree. I didn't hate her role. I like how the involvements played out with, like, what happened with her, if they kind of recap it and how things are working.
But you know what? It's not about her.
It exactly is.
No, it's Cooper's. I feel like it's Anne Hathaway, an actress of her caliber. I feel like she should have maybe gotten a bit more to do.
I don't know, because from what I hear with interviews from Anne Hathaway, she was really happy with the role that she played in and, like, her part in the movie, and that she couldn't ask for more.
Well, that's them just saying that's a bit. You know, it's like, I'm pretty sure once you piss off Chris Nolan, you don't work for him ever again. It's not going to be like a Megan Fox situation where you can just sleep with the director to get back into the movie. That's another discussion. In general, like, yeah, the robots, I really like the robots in this one. I was surprised by how much fun they were.
They're more personable than the other humans.
I was definitely, like, at first I was a little, like, confused how they moved. how it was worked, but like throughout the movie, you see kind of like the how what modes they can move into, how they can set it up. You've got like the mode where it's like walking. You've got the mode where he's rolling, and I was like, holy fuck!
Yeah.
So you know what? For a very monolith, flat, solid thing, they did a great job to be like, holy fuck, that's an awesome robot.
Yes. And actually, I liked the fact that there were practical effects in the movie. Yes,
a lot of practical effects. Like the whole sandstorm, where like they just had fans in the sand and just like, here, enjoy. And like, I know they made a replica of the spaceship, okay, and like, you know, there's probably the green screen, whatever, behind for like space, but you know, what you're seeing is the actual model of, well,
Like, it was very obviously a model.
I liked the ship.
It was kind of nice because it felt more
real. It felt more realistic,
But at some points it felt very toyetic, if you understand what I mean. Like one of the, not the first docking scene, but the other docking scene, not the really cool one, but the one before the...
Okay, where there's an...
Not yet.
Saints Go Quay?
Before that, but it's just like, it feels like it's like the guy's trying to dock and it's just like not getting there, and it just like, it felt very old school. And I kind of liked it, but I was also like, these really look like models. So maybe
that's how docking works, man.
No, but I'm saying the way it looked, like, you know, it could have maybe CG'd a bit in there to make it look a bit more realistic.
A bit more polished.
It felt very plasticky instead of very metallic. But I still like that there was practical effects. It felt like they were there.
It gave a sense of realism.
I like the ship. I like how they, like, the build their own gravity, so they had it spinning while it was moving. I like that a lot. But I like how that felt like, okay, for what their technology is, they have to limit and do these things. And then they're like lander and their what were their other ships called?
It was just lander.
No, there was a lander and then there was the
there was the Ranger.
There we go, Ranger 1 and 2 were like a lot more sophisticated than what the other ship was, and I was a little like
I wasn't significantly
the smart. Lander especially, I was like, why does that look more advanced than the Rangers as well?
It's the initial unit.
Yeah, when it's they still had like technological know-how, because there was some degradation in their technology.
True. They did well with the ships, they did well with the science-y stuff. What are the characters?
Well, I guess now we can, I'll say from now on there's gonna be probably major spoilers, so that we can, I guess, go a bit more in-depth into it.
Okay, can I get this out of the way?
Yeah, sure.
I now hate Matt Damon.
Why would you hate him? Because he's a good actor?
Oh, he plays his character well.
He plays Dr. Man, who is humanity's greatest
villain.
No.
The thing is, he's
and by the way,
he's not a villain per se. He just got lost in like what the mission. The thing is,
before the mission starts, they say that, you know,
Lazarus, he's the greatest hope.
He's the one that pushed
Lazarus. He's the one that really.
Yeah, you have 12 of the bravest people on Earth, and Dr. Man, Matt, is the greatest of all.
I didn't even know it was him until he comes out of
exactly.
That. Because it's still, like, when you're seeing it...
It looks like anyone.
You can't tell because they're still far away, and it's still blurry.
Him being the greatest, bravest human being of all, but still having human emotions and betraying everyone.
Well, actually, what really I see it as is that... And it comes across in this point when he's justifying to himself as he keeps saying, talking, as they keep walking. And you're like, you know something bad is going to happen at this point. First of all, it's telegraphed like from the moment they're going on the planet, and it's like, I'm pretty sure this isn't going to be good. And then they get to the space base, the patient pod, and like, I'm pretty sure. And then Matt Damon comes out. I'm like, I expected a lot more evil looking person. So at least that was surprising. But his hubris got to him, and it comes through with the line, I knew that I might never see people again. I just never thought that I would land on the wrong planet. And so the fact that he ended up on a planet that had no chance hurt his pride. And so he basically said, well, that was a waste. I failed. I want to go back home. Because, you know, it's like, I was prepared to die, but apparently not. I was prepared to die if I succeeded, but I wasn't prepared to die if I failed.
That's how that comes off.
And there's like so much of a setup. Like, he apparently booby-trapped his robot.
It's very well thought out.
I feel bad for the character who died, though.
Romilly?
Yeah, because he didn't really have much throughout the movie. He's like, he waits for Anne Hathaway and...
Well, okay, like, both deaths
comes back.
Of the crew, the initial crew. Yeah. I feel like they were literally in the movie to die. That was their
whole purpose. Yeah, it was very weak because the first one was avoidable.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Like, straight up avoidable.
Thanks,
yeah.
Anne Hathaway.
No, it's not even that. He was being an idiot because...
He was just waiting for so long.
He was just waiting. He could have walked...
Got in.
Back and gotten in.
And then wait till the robot gets there.
Yeah, because the robot was carrying her.
I mean, it was obvious he had a thing for her. Well, not obvious, but by those actions, he had a thing for her, it seems.
It was just weak. Weak on his part.
Yeah. But yeah, like, that death just felt very pointless and be like, okay, people are gonna die, but I'm like...
He died for no reason.
But yeah, I'm like, okay.
So then there's the scrapped robot that, when they're trying to repair it, explodes because it's booby-trapped. Matt Damon, like, walking away, like, after cracking Cooper's
helmet.
And, like, he's like, I'm there for you, dude. Because he's explaining at first, like, how, like, death, you see, like, the last thing you'll see is, some, like, your family, your...
yeah, human is, like...
What you treasure most.
Yeah.
And then after, like, the scene cracks a thing, you can see Cooper's dying, and Matt Damon's talking to him while he's walking away, being like, yeah, I'm there for you. Do you see your kids now? And he's still hearing the sound of Cooper dying, and he's just like, I'm there for you, I'm there for you. I thought I could do it, but I can't. Hangs up.
Oh, I hate him. God damn it. When you have been alone for as long as he has, he's had a lot of time to think. And the fact there are other people, he has to justify to himself because in his mind, he's doing the greater good by continuing the mission.
Right, yeah, trying to complete plan B.
Yes, but also it's just, he thought he was prepared to kill someone to survive himself.
He was really not prepared for
but
anything.
But he wasn't, and he kept trying to justify it to himself. And it's something you kind of do when you have never really killed a person
before. It's self-preservation because you're trying to keep yourself...
Yeah.
Just to clarify, plan A was to find a planet that could sustain life and bring everybody from Earth to, and plan B was they had a bunch of fertilizer.
Well, not actually. Days. Plan A, okay, all revolves around the fact that they solve gravity.
That too.
Well, no, the whole point...
And finding the planet, but well, first and foremost, okay, they need to find out gravity or...
Later on.
Or else they can't really go through it.
Well, yeah, no, but the main crux of plan A and why it's so different from plan B is that A is people are going to take human on the space station out and we'll go see the new planet.
But it was also thought out in a way that it was not possible. Like,
yeah.
When Michael Caine, we don't talk about him this whole time.
Dr. Brand.
Because he's a very, well, at least his characters are very spoilery to some extent, but yeah.
Yeah, when he tells Cooper the plan, he doesn't tell Cooper that there's really only plan B.
Yeah,
because he's already given up at that point, and he got convinced by Dr. Mann as well that, you know, plan A would never work because they can't see inside the singularity.
No, he solved the equation.
Well, yeah, but he was missing the key ingredient, which is what they couldn't see, which was inside the singularity that would have solved the entire equation, then they could have controlled gravity.
Yeah, in a way, he sent people off, him knowing they wouldn't come back.
They just needed to find planets to do plan B with.
Yeah.
That's it.
And that ends up being, like, the first, like, 2 hours. And I think the last 50 minutes or so is when it goes from science fiction to, things just happen.
Yeah, just wacky.
I know, I think it goes from science to science fiction.
Oh.
It goes more science fiction.
Actually, from how I've heard it described is, it basically goes from hard science fiction to just pure good old science fiction.
Yeah.
Like, the classic.
Because how are you supposed to present the fifth dimension to a three-dimensional being?
So, yeah, Cooper, they end up with a partially disabled spaceship. They try to make their way to the third planet.
They don't really explain this.
And Cooper goes through the black hole, and there's the fifth dimension, and it ends up being that he's the one messing with all the notes, messing with all the...
Because there was a ghost, the daughter, who is also now... Who gets taken by Michael Caine.
Taken!
Dr. Brand!
She gets taken in by Dr. Brand to become a scientist later on and get learned because she is intelligent. Or when she was a kid, she was being followed by what she called a ghost because that was the best way she could describe it, but she never felt scared by it. And it turns out the ghost was the father along Coop the entire time. And we end up in a Tesseract, and that, it's still a visually interesting scene, I find.
It was.
And it gets a little bit ridiculous to some extent, and I don't particularly have an issue with the whole from part science to science, but the whole thing is not just science fiction, sorry. It's just it's very much emotion-based.
Yes.
And it's like, love will find a way.
Well, that's what Anne Hathaway said, and obviously if they had followed what she Dr. Brand said, they would have landed to the planet where they had the best possibility of seeding.
But that whole sequence is silly, well, fun and silly at the same time, because it's like, all this time I believed in science, but maybe I should start believing in love. And Matthew McConaughey's character, Coop, is just looking at him like, bitch, you stupid.
Yeah, but the thing is, had they gone straight to Edmund's planet, which is the third planet, they wouldn't have saved the humans on Earth.
Exactly, it would have been Plan B.
No, it would have been Plan B.
Plan B all the way.
No, that's explained, but it's a whole closed time loop kind of situation, where the events that led them to the future happened in the future, and he kind of exited at some point. It's
pretty crazy. Because you're in the fifth dimension, so it's time and gravity at this point. Okay, time, space for fourth dimension and gravity in the fifth. And, you know, at that point, time doesn't really matter because you see all of time.
Mm.
So are there fifth dimension beings or not?
They are the fifth dimension.
There aren't. The whole sequence in the Tesseract basically is to explain that humans help human out in the end. So in the future, they realize...
onto the fifth
dimension. So in a way, basically, they realize in the future that this situation happened in the past that he goes through, so they created the situation. You see, I can see how it gets confusing, and it is kind of confusing to some extent. It's a closed time loop. So the events that... It's like the first Terminator movie where, you know, the events in the past are going to happen... in the future are going to happen regardless, and so he goes and becomes his guy's father and whatnot.
Plan B succeeded. After millennia, they're like, you know what? I think Plan A would have been better, so let's go and concede.
See, what Sebastian is saying now is that Anne Hathaway, her plan B succeeds.
It wasn't her plan B,
but plan B, she successfully, you know, executes plan B, and those humans that are born on that planet evolve into fifth dimension beings.
Transcend into fifth dimensions.
And then send that wormhole back to save humans of past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Glarg.
Well, that is one theory, or the theory is that the events were always predetermined to happen this way.
Yeah.
So that, you know, in the future, they will always be sending the portal back. Even though he tells the daughter, he sends the
message that says stay.
Not binary.
It's a
Morse code. When he sends the Morse code message to stay, that hopefully he'll stay this time, but this is always supposed to happen.
Yeah.
He can't change the future. He can't change the past. And so, yes, the future humans who are saved by what happened go and basically, it's pretty confusing. Basically, time travel is pretty weird.
And also, in the Tesseract, is Tars Tars, or is it a fifth dimension being talking to him?
It's Tars.
It's Tars, like, communicating what he learned inside the Tesseract.
Remember, he went in first.
Yeah, so who knows how long that was, relatively.
Yeah. So he went in first, he communicated the information, and then he got spit out at some point around the same time when Coop was sent out.
Yeah.
Because remember, they were put into the Tesseract by the humans from the future created the Tesseract for them.
Why didn't we see him swimming around too?
I think that's why it worked if it was Tars, because if it was another human, it would have been like that human would have either died or not died already.
They would have not understood the math behind it.
Well, that for sure.
Well, also they needed the scanners to scan everything. So.
But then I love how Tars is like, give me all the answers to everything and I'll do it in Morse code. I'm like, oh man, this is going to be forever.
Yeah, I thought that was a bit wonky.
Well, you know, maybe it's just one piece of the equation that they were missing.
The one piece of the equation.
Exactly,
but that's still a lot of information to translate.
It was a bit weird, you know, when he's sending the code through the watch, and it's like, but she's gone with the watch, how is he still sending messages? Like, ugh.
I guess he's locked to the watch through time,
because
gravity, you know.
So wonky.
So definitely the last hour became a
lot... Science fiction.
It went a lot more like, oh yeah, but then we could do these things, and I was like, okay, this is where the story felt it pulled me out a bit.
Okay.
Because of just like, it went a little into the extreme. I like that they did it. It definitely made me think afterwards, but then like some of the, I think it was when we went to watch it, I think Ali and I were getting like the same vibe, like this had to end at some point. Why is it like...
No, you know, because...
This is a little wacky.
Like, you guys are saying Tars learned everything in there, but like when he comes out, none of it is mentioned. He's just a scrap heap, right? And Cooper like restores him.
Yeah.
In New Cooperstown, but you you don't, there's nothing. He has, like, no recollection.
Did it say that?
They don't really say that.
They don't say anything. He just, okay. He just fixes him up.
It's because they cut out a lot. Like, obviously, Coop was debriefed after his stay in the hospital. Funny enough, there's no real sense of passage of time in the last sequence. So, when he's on the space station, and he's going to check out his old home and things like that,
you can assume
that it's been at least a few days. He's had to tell his story to somebody, because there's no way some government officials didn't basically get the story out of him. And he gave the information he needed. The old robot TARS had already done his job. They already knew the information they needed. So he basically repairs them, and it's like an old buddy.
Pretty much, so, my friend.
That's basically how it was. That whole part makes sense. Honestly, would you have preferred it if it was some random extraterrestrial being?
No.
It could be.
I liked that it stuck with, like, humans helping humans type
of thing. There's no proof of who the fifth dimension beings are.
Fair enough.
They could be aliens for all we know.
Well, you're right, fair enough.
I'm pretty sure everything is pointing. He literally says in the movie, I think is what he wants you to take, is that it's humans from the future.
Yeah.
He says it. He doesn't imply it, he just says it.
That humanity find a way.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, like, yes, it's implied because we don't know for real, but he's basically telling you that. He's like, humans helped humans.
Yeah, I think they were definitely aiming for that, but you're right. It could have been that
it was TARS 5.0. He did it.
5.0, definitely.
Yeah. The first sequence of the movie on Earth, okay? I liked it. I feel like also, like, it's one of the parts where you could cut out parts of it, still get the same emotional beat, and you could still short maybe a few minutes out of there. Because that's still, like, the first, what, half hour of the movie? Is them on Earth still?
45 minutes, maybe.
Even a bit longer, where they're, yeah. And I'm like, well, I thought they would get to space a lot quicker, in all honesty, because when they get
it's all set up, you know.
Well, yeah, you have to set up really how the world is, you know, at this point in time.
Well, I think it's more so the bond between Cooper
and because that bond is what pretty much brings salvation at the end of the movie.
I still find that there are points in there that could have been, like, chopped. Maybe like that, even first few minutes.
A re-explanation that, you know, they're not teaching. Well, you know, they have the school scene,
yeah,
where he pretty much says, like, yeah, this is all fucked up. And then right after is the scene with, like, the grandfather, where he's explaining the same thing. That could have been cut.
I feel like the entire school sequence could have probably been cut, or at least shortened by bunch.
They said Apollo was a hoax, man.
Yeah, that was just weird.
I think they could have cut that out and just had a quick conversation with the grandfather.
There's a lot of deniers out there, you know.
But I think they could have done a quick conversation with the grandfather and be like, "So, did you go to the thing? Yeah. What'd you say? Well,
it could have been one or the other, but they chose both.
But they chose it to some extent.
Well, I mean, you say it's kind of, you know, people denying the pull, but I mean, we still have people that deny moon landings.
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, I'm saying, like, in terms of the movie, that just feels like it was just so not necessary to
I think it was necessary.
Yeah,
in order to establish that, you know, humanity has given up on
they regressed from, like, their inquisitive nature.
Oh, you're
trying
right,
to
you're
protect
right.
what is left, but what's left is dying
because they have, like, no faith in NASA.
It was more like
Cooper finds out where it is, or like, how the hell did you get
that's
this?
It so you have to
no you're right
you kind of have to set that humanity has given up on space travel.
It gave up on itself, more or less.
Yeah,
well, you say they gave up to some extent, or they, you can also put that it was just, like he said, an elaborate hoax by its propaganda to basically corrupt them to not finding out that where the money is really going. Either way, another thing I did like actually about the movie is that the technology was futuristic, but it was like, it was a nice near future. Mm-hmm. It felt very realizable, like,
especially
in
the robot.
I'm saying in terms of, like, the space station.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. The space station, yes, not so much the flyers.
And I mean, like, yes, there's obviously things like that you would never be able to, like, this kind of mission would obviously never succeed in real life because, you know, it's like fuel, taking account for fuel, food, and all that kind of
thing. Well, it was always planned as a one-way trip.
Well, no, but I'm saying in general, like, even the amount of fuel that they had, there was no way they would be able to carry as much fuel as they would require to get as far as they did.
It's future tech.
Even then.
Run by corn.
It's a future tech, response, you know, I was like, yo, you never know what might happen in 100 years. Maybe that fuel just became, maybe they just became more efficient on using fuel.
Ethanol.
This is near future.
Well, it's a couple of generations.
Not even a couple. It seems like what's implied is that it's maybe
John Lithgow, okay, would be our generation.
Yeah.
Cooper would be the one
actually
after.
Actually, be the...
And then, yeah. You know...
It's implied that it was like the last time. It's like up 50, 60 years.
Yeah.
And obviously there's some big, like, crazy war thing that happened or something, because they imply, like, a lot of humanity is gone, it seems.
Well, they said that at the end, what they missed, okay, wasn't the gadgets, but it was the lack of food.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was just too many people on Earth to feed. So then there's talk about just, like, bombing people and things like that. Overall, I guess, final impressions on the movie?
I'm gonna go watch it again just to get...
I think it really needs a second watch. Kind of like when you watched Inception, you kind of needed that second watch to...
Put everything in perspective.
Like, yeah. You know, because once you watch it the first time, you think about it. Watching it the second time, I think you're gonna catch a lot more things.
It's either gonna make you really like the movie, I think, if you watch it the second time, or really hate
really
the movie.
Hated, yeah.
I agree with you, but I don't think I'm gonna go back to the theater.
Well, yeah, well, you don't watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine-Nine, so your point is mute.
That has nothing to do with it.
Your point is mute, as he says.
Not even mute.
Not mute. Mute. It's just like silent.
I enjoyed the movie. I would say I found it long at parts, but I also found art visually very pleasing.
Visually.
I really enjoyed the movie in that way.
I enjoyed the score.
Do I want to see it a second time right away? No.
We just saw it yesterday. We had some time since...
A day. I saw it yesterday. You saw it...
I've been thinking about a lot of stuff, Matt.
Like, yeah... Well, even then, I think that...
I'll probably watch it.
I'll watch it again, maybe when it's out on Blu-ray or something. But for now, I'm like, yes, I am glad I saw it in IMAX. I feel like if you're going to see this, if you haven't seen this movie yet, this movie should be watched in IMAX.
Definitely.
Because that adds to that experience immensely.
The thing about IMAX, there are no bad seats.
That's not true
for everyone. That's not true for every theater.
Yeah. And because it's not in 3D, at least you don't have to worry about the 3D blind spots or bad spots. Or things like that, where 3D is not as effective. I feel like the movie works for most of it more. It works more than it doesn't, and that's why I recommend that people at least see it if they're seeing it at IMAX. Honestly, I don't know. I didn't see it in like a worse version, like in like say regular theaters or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if you're gonna watch this movie, you should only watch it at IMAX at least once.
A lot of parts were filmed in 70mm because it wants to be.
Yeah.
It has to be seen in
so. Final ratings.
So, yeah, final ratings.
Man, I'm giving it, like, 8.5 black holes out of 10. Gargantuas, what's up?
I don't know. It's definitely worth watching. I think it's gonna win an award.
Definitely effects awards.
No, especially since Howley made the black hole as well.
Yeah.
And Hans Zimmer's scores.
If I'm gonna compare it to other movies, I enjoyed Inception a lot more than Interstellar. That's not to say, like, Interstellar isn't a beautiful movie, but kind of lost me near the end, whereas I feel like Inception.
Well,
it really picked up.
But the thing about Inception,
exponentially,
they're really different concepts in the movies because they both make you think.
Yeah, I'm going with
one's a lot more action oriented than the
other.
Yeah,
I'm going with Mindfuck. So, so definitely watch Interstellar in IMAX if you can. But I enjoyed Big Hero 6 more. Interstellar is definitely one to watch. I'm going to give it 1 Inception out of 2.
So 50.
Wait, is that Inception within a dream or
is it 1 out of 1?
How deep are you in a dream for that?
How deeper do we have to go?
What level? We're going to give it level 5.
Level 5 Inception?
Out of I don't know how many.
We could go deeper.
You can always go deeper. That's the thing. You can,
level 5, you but can we can lost. Go deeper.
I thought there were only 3 levels to the dream world.
We could get...
No, because that... Well, then there's... Hey. The thing is... You technically could go deeper. It just becomes even more...
This is an interstellar within an interstellar.
Okay, Kevin.
Okay.
I agree with Ali with the Big Hero 6 movie. I definitely enjoyed that more than Interstellar. Interstellar's still worth a watch. Again, still on IMAX. A good movie, not going to be my favorite this year. I would give it 7 robotic monoliths out of 10.
7 TARS out of 10.
7
TARS. 7 tons out of 10 cases?
At least one case.
I'd rather have 7 tars than 10 cases.
Case wasn't that bad. He was just much more subdued.
Better.
Oh, by the way, because I forgot to talk about it, there, you remember the really cool docking sequence? Yeah, you know they're going to make it through, but it's just like...
Why do we not talk about that? That was actually beautifully shot.
That was so amazing. That was just awesome. I mean, like, my whole issue with that is that Matt Damon was being really stupid, even for someone who was as crazy as he was. It's like, dude...
He should have known the principles behind it. He should have...
I know you were anxious, but damn.
At that point, okay, he's definitely lost his mind,
He was out of control.
He lost contact with, like, with reality, you know.
He was just constantly trying to convince...
I guess he was trying to convince himself
right to the point where he died, and I was like, yes!
But when he died,
speaking of that docking scene, I think everyone in that theater jumped when it exploded, because maybe not for you, but
it was so sudden.
During our watch, it was just like, quiet, boom! And I could tell people around me jumped.
Yeah, I definitely jumped.
I was surprised by that. I knew something was going to happen, but wow.
The theater did a good job, like, when it rumbled, things rumbled.
Yeah,
you know what? It probably a representation of how the compression in a vacuum would pretty much be.
You know what?
Just sudden.
Despite what I said, it was a very immersive movie.
Yes.
Especially for a movie that's that long, I think it did a good job sucking everyone in.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Like a black hole.
Like a black hole. Because you have 3-hour movies that you're going to be like,
wow.
When Transformers, why?
I'll be lying if I didn't say I did look at my watch a few times, because towards the last 50 minutes, I looked at my watch, I'm like, I feel like the movie's been going on for, like, a good amount.
Well, I mean, it could have ended, like, right after that Tesseract scene. It could have just, like...
Yeah.
It could have ended at any point.
And it could have ended there, but I feel like he wanted to drive home the emotional message a bit more, even though I still think, like, at points it's not perfectly... Well, not perfectly, but it's not super well done.
All you need is
like,
love.
I feel like at some points I felt like I did care, and at some points I feel like, I guess I should care because I'm being told I should care.
I'm glad that Cooper got to see his daughter, even though his daughter aged a lot. I'm glad that
Nolan, okay, this is probably like the first couple of times that he actually tries an emotional connection between his characters, because from previous movies, that was never really established, those emotions, like love and all that. So it's probably his first try really going for that. You know, I think he did a good job, okay? Could have been better, but I don't think it's a major...
Would you say Cooper seeing his daughter is the equivalent of Leonardo DiCaprio seeing his kids?
Yeah, we don't even see the kids.
At the end of Inception?
Except for we don't know if that's real.
But do you know if it's real or not? Maybe he's dead.
Maybe he's fifth dimension beings.
Maybe he never got saved.
Maybe inside the Tesseract.
Maybe Interstellar takes place inside
a dream.
In Inception.
Exactly. Dream. This is actually the next level.
The last level.
Yeah, and Matthew McConaughey is the other dreamer.
I guess my final thoughts were, beautiful movie to watch. Definitely should see an IMAX at least one. You know what? Maybe in 25 years when it's like, old retro movie showdown, Interstellar.
I think
Interstellar might be a classic in 25 years. And
it definitely has more longevity. But in 25 years, they'll be like, oh, that science is so cute.
Well, you know, it's like 2001 A Space Odyssey, you know?
Yeah.
It's a classic. People didn't get it right away when they saw it. 25 years later, it's a must-see movie. I think Interstellar has the potential of being that as well.
It definitely does. I think I'm going to give it 8 Lovell Find the Ways out of 10. And that was our, I guess, not-so-brief impressions on the movie Interstellar.
It could have been longer.
So join us in our outro where we will peep our different links. Episodes of Geeking Out at the Tower podcast. If you would like to reach us with comments, questions, or whatever else, then you can email us at gottcast@gmail.com, tweet us on Twitter at gottcast, or visit our website, Dylan Progress at the moment, at gottcast.wordpress.com. Anything else you guys would like to say before we head off?
Watch
Birdman. If you have the chance, watch it. It's a fantastic movie.
I like turtles.
Have a good night.
Love is the answer. Thanks for listening and have a good time.
Stay frosty, bruh.